Welcome to the sixth episode of the IsCast. I have here David, Ben, Wade, and myself, Lee. We're going to start off with some Down Under Heaven news that we recently released.
Hells yeah. I guess starting right off, the Down Under Heaven prelude was just released about a couple weeks ago with the one-year anniversary of when we shot it, which was May 19th/20th. A fitting time to put it out. So anyway, if you guys want to check it out, go to downunderheaven.com. It's the newest post. And so that's kind of, I guess, we wanted to try and put something out there to show off, A, our trooper suit, which is really badass, and B,
really
kind of,
badass.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. It's going to get even more badass.
Yeah. And
the
we
badassery
also,
will only go up from here.
We also, yeah. Well, we didn't originally, like, plan it to, you know, do all these visual effects. We wanted to actually be really minimalist in the visuals we did, like almost nothing. But as the idea progressed and as we got further into post, Lee especially was like, you know, why don't we add this? Why don't we change this? And not half because
you have to.
Right. Well, half because we wanted to, you know, try and make it look cooler and actually look better. Like,
well,
better
first
quality.
Of all, it's a Halo universe, so it can't just be
right
what people have already seen.
Yeah. And I'm not disagreeing. And so it eventually.
Right. Otherwise, it's really boring.
Yeah. And actually, it was actually kind of good because in the process, I got to learn how to use After Effects, which, you know, is really useful. Anyway, so.
I think that's a large part of what this prelude served for a lot of us is it's a learning experience,
yeah.
Especially for.
Well, that's what this whole project is, well, for me, at least.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We're not doing it for the money.
But specifically, no, that's for sure. Like, one of the things we didn't, I think, foresee when we started filming was that, like, you have to set up shots like they're prepared for the visual effects as well, and I think that's,
yeah,
that we also
much more planning,
mm-hmm,
next time, but yeah, we've got some, I think, positive feedback, not much negative
compared to everything else we've put out this far. Yeah,
yeah,
probably
we're at
the best response,
and on YouTube where the prelude is posted, we're currently at over 5,900 views on it.
Nice.
Which,
yeah,
is,
we did
sure this takes the record then for the highest viewed video,
yeah,
of Down
Beat
Under
the
Heaven,
Wade's
of,
Power of Halo,
and higher than anything that the Intersection YouTube account has.
I just want to say that the whole Power of Halo thing I did because I was bored, and I did it in like 16 hours. So
yeah,
that can, you know.
That's why it's funny that it got the most views. But yeah, we did do some ad space, but we got some good traction on Facebook and,
yeah,
stuff. Got 1,100 likes now. So that's awesome.
I will say I do know for sure that at least 400 of those likes are directly because of my ad space.
Yeah.
Well,
it just shows you how. You know, it's not, most of the time, it's not necessarily maybe that you don't have a good idea. It's that you don't have visibility with people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually kind of nice, the whole ad thing that Facebook does. They make it really easy to take out ads and kind of do it in a style you want. If you want to boost a certain post or if you want to, like, boost your page. The problem is how they hook you into doing it is they say, oh, yeah, if you pay this much, you'll get between this and this many likes per day, and you're like, oh, that's a lot of likes, I want to do that, but it's not guaranteed. That's just what they project it to be.
Yeah.
And so eventually, you know, I think I paid like $200 in total, and it got us a lot of likes, but I don't know if it's worth it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think at this point I just want to try and put out good content and have it go viral.
Yeah,
as opposed to having to,
you
know, pay
but
for the ad space.
You need that, you need somewhat of a base to, because now
you need your,
if you look at the analytics, the amount of people that are connected to those 1,100 people, because that's how it works, is it's based off who those people are connected,
yeah,
to.
Yeah, and
so
on YouTube,
like,
it will show
the web girls.
It'll show how people got to that.
Mm-hmm.
Got to the video, like whether they came from Facebook or from some other random website. I posted it to Reddit. I'm not sure how many people,
yeah,
were from Reddit there.
Because most of the time I could see that on YouTube, like our previous, like most of them in the website too, like most of them came from the 405th, because that's where, you know, we were posting, and the high volume of people that would be interested in it were there and seeing it and would follow through and click.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not a lot. You're not going to get a lot of random people through YouTube just looking through YouTube.
Yeah.
Like, people that go to YouTube, they look for a specific video or their subscriptions.
Unless you're me at like 4 a.m, like I can't stop. Just like, yeah. It's so funny
but usually you follow like lists that they have or like popular lists or suggested. So unless you have a lot of Halo related related things, like maybe we'll be a connection there.
Well, yeah, that's how we got a lot of views on the Power of Halo. Was it was attached to one of the Fallen trailers as like a related. But it's funny because like there are people out there like me that are up at like 4 a.m. just looking at random videos on YouTube.
Holla.
And it's funny because like you can always see it in the comment section. There's people like, oh, I'm in the weird part of YouTube again.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, and talking about the Prelude, so another quick thing about the I know we talked about it the last podcast.
Yeah, we did.
But we are going to be presenting at Rooster Teeth Expo, which is Rooster Teeth's convention down in Austin, Texas, which is July 5th through 7th. And we do now know for sure that the title of our panel is the schedule will probably be coming out within the next week or so, I think. But the title of our panel will be Halo Fan Films Expanding the Universe. We don't know when we will be scheduled yet, but you can watch. I'm sure we're going to talk about it at our next podcast, but probably right before we go.
Yeah.
We'll probably record a podcast then. Maybe.
After.
Okay.
We'll see.
And I guess
watch the Facebook and stuff.
Yeah.
And you'll
Facebook.
See, you'll see lots of stuff about it.
And the reason why we didn't do a podcast last weekend, last Sunday, is because we were in the middle of doing the 48-hour film festival.
Hey.
Great transition, Wade.
I'm all about
segues. That's classy right there.
So yeah,
we should get one.
This time last week, we were busy doing, we were doing pickups, and you were editing.
Can you explain what you're talking about?
We were in the middle of principal right now.
Oh, it's right.
Today. It's Saturday. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So we were in the middle of principal photography.
So from 6 p.m. or 7 p.m. Friday to 7 p.m. Sunday, 48 hours, we had that much time to write, shoot, edit, finalize a film. And they do it all over the country.
It's called the 48 Film Festival,
something like that.
Is there's the this film project one, I think
when like, they do it in multiple cities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. this centralized one, they have like one in New York, and I think they have one in Chicago. I'm sure there are other states that have their own individual ones, but this is like one.
Yeah, and basically they had a kickoff thing. We went there and they gave us a character that we had to have, an object, a line of dialogue, and then also our genre, which was quite weird of a genre, but
I think
it worked.
I think it did a really good job, actually.
I liked that it was mistaken identity, and I liked that it was a little more specific to help scope our ideas.
Yeah.
It's
otherwise, we get
too
crazy.
Well, it's interesting because it's not really... When I think of mistaken identity, I don't really think of a genre, I think of a situation, because like you can make that
I agree with
a horror or a comedy, as it's been so many times before.
Yeah.
So and I guess in that aspect, it gives us a lot of flexibility.
Sure. And it's weird because like I think you have a good point. It's not exactly a genre; it's more of a situation, because there are only a handful of films that actually have that, as opposed to the horror genre, which is thousands of movies.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and actually, I was just thinking about it. Katie had the input to do that last line at the end, right? Which
right.
I think really brought home the whole mistaken identity. I think that kind of made it.
Yeah. Well, that was Ben and Katie's idea. It was both of you who had talked about that.
Good idea, Ben.
It was more Katie than it was me.
Good job, Katie.
30% good idea.
I'm looking at their website here, and apparently in 2012, they had 50,000 filmmakers make over 4,000 films in 120 cities across all six habited continents.
Wow,
crazy.
So that's all from this one place.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And so the I think it's the 12th / the 13th is what the website says for the showing. I don't know if they're gonna like split up the days, like do half one day, half the other. It's like a 2-hour block where they show them.
Yeah.
There's probably one event, but maybe the
best screening is the 19th.
There's one event where they're showing all of them, and then there's the one afterwards where they show
it. Yeah, it is June 12th to 13th is the premiere screenings, and the best of is the 19th.
Okay, Lee, you don't want to show up and have to watch yours in front of other people?
Well, also endure all the pretty bad ones. that I'm sure there are out there.
But then you can be like, oh, ours is better than that.
I would be more interested in seeing what was better than ours rather than what was worse. But
no, that's true. And the thing is, like, ours is good, but we just didn't. We could have used like another day at least to edit.
Not just edit, but I think plan a little bit more too, because we were under time technically, because the time limit was, or time minimum was 4 minutes, and we
we didn't plan out that effectively enough. We didn't shoot enough footage.
Yeah, I think
because we were missing a lot
time
of
on a 48-hour film festival. Time management is the most important thing. The whole thing and whatnot. And you know, I know both Wade and I, we had work and stuff. We had to work around, so we had to cut. We basically cut our filming day in half. Mm-hmm. And so we had to have a script that reflected the limited
That would have helped a lot. And then also me, like, if I could have edited it while you were filming, that would have been amazing. Because then I could be like, whoa, this is boom mic in the shot.
Boom mic. Continuity error.
Looking back, it would have been awesome.
Because we had a lot of audio dialogue issues and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. It would have been great to do the outside shooting first, get that done, and then move inside because it rained after that. If we had to work that day.
Right. Yeah.
Then moved inside, you would have edited the outside, seen what problems there were, and then you guys would have already like been into the scene already because you know what you did before. So coming inside here, you would have, you know, been in the same, had the same momentum going.
Yeah.
Mm.
That would have been ideal.
Yeah.
But, and that question's, I mean, you have to think when you're producing movies, do you want to shoot this in order? Or in chronological order, or do you want to do it separately?
And most of the time they do it out of order, and they just kind of expect the actors to
you run with it.
Because I remember The Hobbit, the Bilbo guy, his first scene was with Gollum in the cave.
Yep. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. So it was just like right off the gate, just this intense. Like,
yeah, there's the other one. I think when they were filming the original trilogy, I think the first scene that Bilbo and Sam, or Frodo and Sam had to shoot together was the scene on the side of, like, the really emotional scene when they're on the stairs. Yeah. Like, that was the first scene that, like, Sam had to do all this work for getting into it. And then they, because they would shoot both half, each half. So one when the camera was just on Sam, one when the camera was just on Frodo. They filmed it, and then it was like a year or something later they were finally able to come back to it to film Frodo's half.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, like, that's, Sam was at the disadvantage crazy. There.
Yeah,
like,
but it looks great. Different. But I think it does. It's also up to the director to make sure that they're expressing the emotion that's gonna match
completely
with the film.
This was a huge, like, I don't think I've directed an intersection project in over a year and a half now. I think it's been a long time since I've had to do anything. And you know, in a lot of the early shorts, if you go back and look at some of the stuff from like our intersection shorts season on YouTube, there are some, as I did air quotes to the to the audio podcast, there are some shorts in there that I thought really looked good, and there are quite a few in there that I really did a bad job on personally.
It's a learning process.
Yeah, so next time I'll do better.
Yeah,
I think there's a mixed reviews on if we want to do this next year or not, but we'll find out.
I mean, it is a expensive.
Yeah, you did have to pay money to get into it.
Which I wonder how many bad ones there actually are going to be. Because how many bad other projects, films that are going to be submitted.
Yeah.
Because you have to commit to something like that. Because we got the earliest that we got into was $120, but it goes all the way up to $180.
Yeah.
If you're late. I had a lot of fun doing like DP work. I think like just focusing on where the camera is and just... like just focusing on that, like, kind of brought me back to film school, and that was a lot of fun.
Well, I think we're too used to putting on multiple faces and multiple roles.
You mean?
Yeah.
It's gonna be nice when we can start moving. Like, we've already begun to move away from that. Like, when it was me, Ben, and Austin, and we had to do everything. So like, Ben would write stuff and he would act in it and also deal with all the podcast stuff, and I had to
stuff. We also haven't dealt with real actors before because we were going to.
That's our goal for this summer.
Something happened and they couldn't show up, and Ben had and David's girlfriend had to take their place. So obviously we lost their help in hand through other means.
Well, the next one we do is going to be with her. Like, she wants, Kelly is her name, right?
Yeah.
She wants to, so it'll be with her.
Yep.
And then Catherine, the girl who wants to write for us. So yeah, we're going to be set next time.
Yeah. We're only going up from here.
Exactly.
Well, to switch it to Minnesota-based film events projects, I don't have too much information. I just heard that the Snowbait project.
Yes.
That had already existed. Was this the petition that we were trying to for? So it did pass through the Senate or the state, and they got... $10 million
into law. Wow.
Yeah, jumping up from 500,000.
Yeah,
so huge increase.
Huge.
But I'm seeing here in our notes, it's still one of the least competitive.
Yeah.
In the here, but it's still in the now in the top 15, mm-hmm. which you know for like thinking about it, $10 million is a lot of money. It's an obscene amount of money, but it's awesome that we were able to get that really really noticeable increase in funds. But still, like as I've mentioned before, Michigan, I think they have like $100 million.
And the other thing to consider, too, is that I don't know how often this $10 million fund gets refreshed. I don't think it's like per year.
No, I think this is supposed to last them for like another 5 or 10 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is unfortunate because you're not going to get the larger films to come here and try to go for that rebate.
Yeah.
That's okay. It is a refund.
It's refunded. It's up to 20%. And you have to, submit it during post production. So you don't plan for it within your budget. They don't they don't want that it's a like you're making it for them. It's just a nice refund.
Yeah, and it's for refunding of like using Minnesota post artists. Post
and you workers. And you have to have like receipts of everything and show.
Yeah.
Everything
that which is important for all filmmaking, no matter whether or without rebates. Yes. Receipts are important.
Yes,
exactly. And you know what? $10 million is right now. MNFilm.tv says that they have 180,000 available in funds. So I mean that's just an order of magnitude. You know,
in
the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And does say bill language also increases the maximum reimbursement percentage to 25%.
Hey,
so we'll, you know. Little extra
sauce for the goods.
Yeah. And just for other small filmmakers in Minnesota, you can apply for this too. It's not specifically for like the larger sets or the larger projects. Like even for us, that's something
we can apply for as well. There isn't a minimum that you have to spend?
Nope. Okay. It still has to be approved, but
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, they just want to make sure it's helping the community of what kind of project it is. Not helping directly, but just, you know, you're using local, mostly local resources and you're putting money back into the Minnesota economy.
Mm-hmm.
Right on.
Well, I think that's all that we had for local stuff.
Now there's a ton of big stuff coming up in the next, just in the next
Monday,
week.
Right?
Yeah, Monday. Everything starts Monday.
We got E3
or the pre E3 press conferences. So all the big players like Microsoft and Sony, they all have press events before E3 starts.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it starts on Tuesday or Wednesday.
That was the 10th. When does E3 start? Thursday?
I think it is Tuesday because they all do it the day before basically. Okay. So that they have their own press events where it's all focused on just them before the big hullabaloo of E3. So we got that.
That makes sense.
So all those announcements are on Monday, and then next week is all E3. And on Monday is the start of Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference. So for all of us, it's going to be a very exciting week and a lot of going back and forth about all the new stuff that's coming out.
Yep.
And I know for some people, some very annoyed phone notifications.
Hopefully not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm most excited about E3, just getting more information about the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4 and just what gaming is going to turn into.
Yeah,
I'm really tired of seeing all the speculation on Reddit and all the people just raging.
They did. Microsoft did release more details on rentals and sharing games and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's pretty interesting, and also the always on. It's
every 24 hours.
Yes, you have to have it plugged into the
internet. For games, not for
yep.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
To play games, so like the games that you, you know, because everything's digital now. So whether you buy it physically, you
did
transfer.
Did they say that the game you're just going to download the games like you would for Steam?
Or
is the content still on the disc?
It's still on the disc.
I'm pretty sure you. No, you attach that physical game to your account, so it goes digital.
Yes. Oh no, that's what I mean. But you don't purchase it. You don't purchase it like through Xbox Live Arcade.
You can buy the disc. So any physical game is digitally available on day one.
Oh, they are doing. Oh, yes. I didn't hear that. Awesome.
So, but I'm sure you can still buy it physically, but then you still attach it to your account. So you then I love that because I love not looking for a disc. I can just hop on and pick the game I want or switch. Like I do on the computer. So I'm, you know, obviously it's not the best as far as flexibility of ownership, but
yeah,
I enjoy the experience.
That's something that PC gamers have been experiencing.
I know
for the past couple
that
years.
That's why like they don't, someone, you know, they tend to look over what Steam does and like what it is, 'cause they love it so much, but yet it restricts a lot of things.
There are some rumors actually too, that Valve is going to be releasing some box.
The rumored, ever rumored Steam box.
Yeah.
I mean, they've had the big idea thing for a
while.
But
like, what's the purpose of that though? Like, I can hook any new TV up to my computer now. Like, why would that matter?
I remember, it was talking about for people who. I think it sounds like a nice computer. Well, I think it's a sort of off of the idea of why consoles exist. And that is for the standardized set of hardware.
Yeah.
That the developers can build to this spec, and we know at least with this.
But
Steam
also,
box, it will always
but
work.
Also the cost that I'm going to spend $400 and get a nice gaming system.
Yeah.
Where if I want to get that same gaming system in a computer form, I have to buy, extra. Not extra, but
you have to spend a little.
Spend a little bit more because you are getting more flexibility with it because it's not.
And
prioritary.
Generally more power too.
Yeah. But it was cool though because they are supporting loans, but it's you can, I don't know what the time frame was, but I can loan digitally a computer to a game to somebody
from if they're in your friends list for a month.
Yeah, they have to be in your friends list for at least a month, and then you can only loan it once.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if there's a time frame of like how long they can play it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I know there's
so you can like it's kind of like a better demo,
Yeah, so and like, I noticed the other thing they did was sort of passing the buck thing, where like because they had been talking about like as far as like reselling games and everything, like Microsoft then later came out and said, you know, we're not gonna stop any kind of like just giving it, but the publishers could deem to either turn that off completely and not have them be resellable or have like a fee. So, like, if I wanted to sell to Yuli, you would have to pay, like, a $5 fee on activation.
I think that's a great idea, like, giving the power to the publisher that actually
owns
the content. But.
Yeah, I think it's good and bad because I feel like there are some publishers that are like, oh, yeah, let's totally do this. You know, pay us an extra $5 and then you're good. But there are also other developers that are so tight on, like, we want maximized profit that they'll turn it off completely to make you have to pay the full 60 for a game rather than, and of course, in $5, I'm also just throwing that out there as a random number for the fee. Like, they haven't announced that in any way, so don't quote me on it.
But the problem is, like, then you just won't play their game. Like, if you're not going to spend the $60 and then they're not going to get your money. Like,
yeah.
They got to find a nice place on the curve.
Right. Yeah.
I read this article the other day. I can't find it, but this guy was saying how it's so interesting where, you know, PS4, Xbox, these consoles are putting so much investment into E3 when the whole show could be stolen from a non-console company if, like, Valve came out and they were talking about, like, the importance of the PC industry, blah, 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 and then...
They announced Half-Life
Episode 3. All of a sudden, they flash the Half-Life 3 logo, and
then
out.
It's gone.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And then, the whole thing shut down.
And then, like, E3 is like, oh, Half-Life. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So, I think that'd be kind of
still have yet to play that.
Yeah, I know the Rooster Teeth podcast guys were saying that, you know, a brilliant marketing move for Steam and Valve, like, it is if they made a Steam box, and day one, it comes pre-installed with Half-Life Episode 3, Portal 3 and like Team Fortress.
Portal 3.
Yeah, like the other, like he was just throwing out random, like Portal and
the next Team Orange Fortress.
Yeah, like the basically the next Orange Box set for them. Like it all came with. Like that would absolutely kill to have that.
It's kind of a question for Valve, because Valve has always been a software company, kind of like Microsoft has always been a software company, and just
and then they came and messed up hardware.
Yeah, then Microsoft developed their hardware, which is the Xbox.
They've had some the Xbox, you know.
I was referring to more specifically to the Surface.
Yeah.
Oh.
No, yeah, the Xbox is fine. I have definitely encountered.
I'd say their worst would probably be the Zune, but
oh yeah,
man, the Zunes were cool though. They were really
defined cool.
Yeah.
Their material that they were made out of, like there was like metal and glass. It felt cool. I really liked.
I gotta say, I was more interested in like the $120 Dell MP3 player than the Zunes when those were out.
Oh, I thought it was really cool. I would have bought one if it was.
You guys remember the pre iPod days of MP3 players where it was just
pre what?
Like
Yeah, what? I remember those.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It was like the Wild West of like new media stuff. Like I have this. Oh, but I have this, but it's not compatible. But check out this new technology.
Yeah. Well, I remember a little earlier than that when everyone you're still having to use CD player Walkman style things, and it was a big deal if you had a CD player Walkman that could do MP3 files for on your disc, so you could burn your own discs on in MP3. And then it was started switching to all the different kinds of MP3 players you could pick up.
Yeah, because
I said anti-skip, but it wasn't really anti-skip.
Yeah.
Oh. Anti-skip, that just drained my batteries. You're on the bus, you're trying to listen to it without a skipping.
I had to hold mine like in my arm as a shock absorber.
Gyro.
Yeah,
because really in my experience in my life, the iPod didn't get famous until like in our class, until like the iPod mini.
Yeah.
That's when it boomed, the third version, everybody had say. An iPod
like when
mini.
It, when it switched to like the wheel.
You weren't cool.
Instead of the, because before it was like the buttons. Yeah. That was
Gen 2. Gen 1 was an actual physical wheel that turned. Gen 2 had the buttons.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what I was saying. So the third gen was the one where it switched to the actual wheel. Like, what I think in a lot of people's mind was the first iPod was that Generation 3 one.
Yeah.
Like, that's when people don't remember the earlier ones. That's, even in our own age group, they don't remember like those first two.
Oh, yeah. I don't, because I don't think I was invested in those.
Well, it was quite expensive too.
Yeah. I just remember seeing it in an ad now and again, or seeing some article about
it. It's so weird. Have you guys watched the keynote where Steve Jobs announces the iPod?
No, I haven't actually.
It's actually kind of cool. Well, back then it was FireWire. That's how you hooked it up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And their whole tagline was 1,000 songs in your pocket.
I remember that.
They had Moby endorsing it and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was crazy because they're like, and it has anti-skip technology built right in. And you're like, wow, anti-skip. I don't have to press a button. Like, wow, 1,000 songs. And he's like, Steve Jobs was like, yeah, most people, their entire sound or song library, their whole CD library is about 1,000 songs, roughly. And this can hold all that in your pocket.
That's probably a good average. Because
the whole thing is like,
well,
people,
it was a good average.
People used to carry on those huge books of CDs.
Yep.
Like those giant cases,
the DJs come in with the two or three books of CDs. Yeah.
So he was trying to just change all that, which is kind of cool, because you know, I didn't know that happened. You know, I was too young to really pay attention to what was going on with Apple back then. So it's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
My first iPod was a iPod Nano. Actually, I had a Creative or a an MP3 player from Creative, but then I traded it.
I was the first one in high school to have an iPod Video.
Ooh, that's when I saw that and I was like, whoa, I can watch music videos on my
iPod.
Yeah. And
I'm pretty sure I watched a movie in class one time.
Stay in school, kids.
It's like chemistry or something.
And I didn't get one until I think it was the second generation iPod Touch.
Did you guys play
the games that came with?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I had
Solitaire.
No, like the
Breakout.
Was it
called
that? Where it's like you hit the ball and
that
destroys. Or like the tank one.
It had the parachute
like
just dropping down.
Pre app.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. No, they used to have it before like you could get apps. They had like this specific part in the iTunes store where you could buy like $5 games for your iPod.
Oh, yep.
And so there
I
was
got
like,
some of those.
There was like Sonic. There was, I think that was the only one I got. But there were a couple on there.
So back to E3. Does anybody actually care about the PlayStation 4 here?
Not really.
No. It's gonna be.
That was a nice exhale, David.
I feel a feeling it's gonna be more expensive than the Xbox, like it was, like the PS3 was.
It's definitely gonna be an interesting fight, if you will, because they've both definitely gone in two different tangents at this point. Mm. We got the PS4 is really with how they've been selling it so far, anyways. This may change as of Monday, but they've really been geared more towards just the gamer. And the Xbox is shifting towards the everybody can buy it. It centralizes your whole home theater system.
I would disagree with that, though, because what I'm actually excited about is the reason I have an Xbox is because first it was Halo, and then also all my friends have Xbox as well. So if I want to play somebody, it's on the Xbox. It's not the PlayStation. Mm-hmm. But what they were talking about, they have, what is it, like 15 exclusive IPs coming. Because that's what I hated about the Xbox.
Seven of them being original franchises.
Yep. Sony had much better exclusive content and games. And that's the only thing I hated about Xbox is because I wanted to play some of those games. Mm-hmm. And I just couldn't spend the money to just play God of War or Uncharted or any of those other ones.
I know, I am tempted once the PS4 comes out to buy a PS3 because there are a lot of games that I want to play, like the Uncharted franchise and Journey.
Heavy Rain, I want to play.
There's a couple for this. So I think like when the prices drop way down for the PS3.
Get some of those on PC, though?
Those are all
PS3 exclusive.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I've thought about it for a while, specifically because I wanted to get a Blu-ray player.
Yeah, but now we don't. Now we can just wait for the one.
Yeah.
So. What I really want to know is, can I play Destiny with people on multiple platforms?
I've thought about
that's
that.
That's what I want to know.
I think it'd be awesome, but I don't really see Microsoft and Sony getting along well enough to be willing to set up that cross-platform.
But it's not about Microsoft.
No, it's not about either of them. It's specifically those servers are going to be hosted by Activision. Because
apparently, I could be wrong, but Defiance, a new game that recently came out, does it.
Yeah, it is cross-platform. PC
really?
And
I thought it was
MMO.
Just a PC.
No, because it's an MMO. But so it's obviously it's the, you know, Destiny's not an MMO, but I want to be able to. Obviously, I don't have many friends that. I think Sean has.
Yeah.
He has both, but, you know, I don't have any friends. Oh, I guess my brother-in-law.
Austin has a PS3.
PS.
But, you know.
But I think that'd be awesome. Yeah, I want more games like that.
Yeah. I am also curious with the Xbox One. I really want to get my hands on the controller. Because
just want to sign a petition to make them remake a Duke.
Make the Duke.
They did release more information. It's kind of cool. It pairs faster by using an LED light in the back of the controller.
And it's wide direct. Hmm? Isn't the current one through Bluetooth?
Probably.
Because the new one is something called Wide Direct or Wireless Direct, which I think it's something specifically geared towards device to device connections. Mm.
It's like pairing with.
But it's pretty cool because the Kinect can see where the controller is. So if I'm playing split screen with Wade, and I jump over to the other side of him, it'll detect that and switch our screens around.
Cool. So no longer do we have to be like, all right, you sign in first. All right, I'm over here. Yep. Let's switch spots.
Yep. Yeah, yeah,
that's cool. That's awesome.
Always getting the top screen.
Yes.
TVs. The other thing is that if you put down your controller, like say like you're watching a movie or something like that,
it'll
turn off.
It goes into
reduce power mode.
Reduce power mode.
Yeah, like that. Basically sleep.
Or if you leave the room too.
Yep.
We're living in the future.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for my nerdy report.
Like I already have that, but
the other big thing happening next week. We got to mention it at least a little bit. WWDC.
Oh yeah, okay. I thought we were talking about E3, so I'm like, move on.
Oh no. Because I know, like Lee, you were saying you were looking forward to E3 a lot. For me, being a more financially lower person, and I don't have quite as much money to spend on games. I know because Apple has all the products that I need to work, so I'm really looking forward to that. And there's all the rumors about, you know, there's probably going to be an iMac refresh, possibly a MacBook Pro refresh.
I don't know about iMac.
No.
Not Mac iMac. Pro. Not iMac. I mean, if anything they're going to do with the iMac is that they're just going to give it the new Haswell processors that Intel just came out with.
Yeah. No. And possibly the new Thunderbolt.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
I don't think that's ready yet.
I don't know.
I've heard some rumors about them. But then also iOS 7 and the new version of OS X. Mm-hmm. Which in theory would be OS X 9.
The problem, though, that recently they've done, though, is like with the last OS is they released a bunch of new features that I was like super excited for. Like they're like, oh, you can do your AirPlay or desktop and blah 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 and blah blah blah, and then
so much of it
and
was
then it came out restricted. And then it was like, oh, my computer from only 2009, like 3 years old, can't do any of it.
Yeah.
And that's weird actually for Apple, because Apple's been pretty persistent about keeping
Think it is.
No, I think
it's they're all about people upgrading, like
their latest version of OS X can still plan or can still work on some of the older releases.
A lot
of the features don't work.
Yeah.
On mine, like I have a MacBook Pro from 2007, late 2007, early 2008, and one of the big things for me is like my trackpad is so old that it can't do any of the new trackpad features, which made that's probably more a hardware thing.
Yeah.
But even like I can't do any of the AirDrop stuff because I don't know what's wrong with mine that I can't do AirDrop, which I thought would be a really handy feature, like especially in a situation like this when all four of us are sitting around a table, we all have our computers on the same Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I mean, another one was PowerNap, can't do that. Oh yeah, you
need an SSD for that. Yep. One, I think.
AirPlay,
mirroring to a TV.
Yeah, but I mean that kind of makes sense. They, if they're designing upgraded software that is designed to make better use of more processing power, you're going to need a better machine.
Yeah. You know, obviously it's hardware dependent, some of it, which I understand, but again, like don't wait to tell me that.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me all excited about all these new features. Yeah. Like that's the main, that's the point Apple's of upgrading.
Blue balls,
and then and then I pay $30 and then I find out.
Yeah. Or it had a similar thing with,
you didn't read the fine print before you downloaded this.
I had the same thing with iOS 6.
System requirements.
Like there was a lot of things that are like a bunch of the cool, really cool features don't work on my iPhone 4. Like I can't do any of the panorama stuff.
Well, yeah, but they said you couldn't do that before it came out.
At least I didn't say that in the case. I didn't see that in the case. Like I had to read into the fine print of the the pages.
Sure. Well, I mean, if you keep up on Mac rumors, they'll tell you stuff like that. So, like, you know, when iOS 6 came out, I'm like, oh, okay, I know that. Because I have a 4, I can't do like the flyover.
I can't even do turn by turn directions.
Yeah,
on my
4. You need Siri for that.
Yeah.
No, the Google Maps does it just fine.
The biggest thing though that I was excited about was the AirPlay, because when you're trying to watch online shows that aren't on TV and it's through websites that only have Flash.
Yeah.
The only way is using your desktop, to get it on my TV through my forgot the name of it.
Apple TV
is through AirPlay. So.
Yeah, there's the two rumored, if Apple is going to do a new product, the two biggest rumors right now are, one, either an Apple TV being an actual like 42-inch HD TV of some kind, or an iWatch with curvable glass.
There's been a lot of rumors about that new watch.
I just don't see the point of that. Like, I don't want a watch. I hate having things on my wrist.
I love watches, so I would totally buy one.
Well, see, I had one of the newer iPod Nanos that actually had one of those wrist things.
Yeah.
You make a watch, I just thought that was so weird.
I think the Google Glass is a better idea than a watch.
See, what I think would be better, though, is if Google and Apple can put aside their differences. I know it won't happen, but if they could, because if they get an iWatch, because the whole idea is the whole band would be a touchscreen. So rather, because Google Glass, it has on the right side brim is like the touch sensitive half of the glasses where you can tap and do things to control the glasses. Like if they could interface it instead with an iWatch on your wrist, so you can be sitting down and you can be tapping buttons on your wrist instead of having to reach up to your glasses. Yeah. And you maybe one be more. They could be,
I don't
like,
know.
They can do display changes.
I also don't want glasses either.
Nobody wants glasses.
It's all just going to be. We're going to get internal implants built into our bodies, and we're just going to be moving closer to
Well, I just want the, like, even though they're irritating, but, like, maybe just, like, an eye contact.
You mean like an actual iPhone?
Hmm? Put an iPhone in your eye?
An iPhone.
See, like, yeah, for me, because I wear glasses, what I would love is to have it where my glasses lenses could be the translucent displays, and I can have my glasses just be a permanent heads-up
display.
That's
dangerous.
Yeah.
Like for driving.
Yeah. Well, I think the key thing for driving would be, because they have to be so close to my eyes, they'd have to be adjustable focus, like the focus of the image on the glass. So I could focus it to the same distance as I should be looking to drive.
I think there was
so in order to see it in focus, I could see out there.
I think that would hurt your eyes with you constantly having to refocus your
eyes. The point is you don't have to refocus. My point is you set the focus to being 100 feet ahead of you so that the only way to see what's on the displays is to be looking that far ahead, which is how far, I think that's about how far ahead you need to look for a car.
Then what you need is having a camera that would look back at your eye to tell what your iris is doing.
Or just a
button. We're getting decades in the future now.
Yeah. Well, let's switch it instead to centuries into the future and Star Trek.
Yeah.
How's that for a segue? That was that's brilliant.
That's a good segue. I mean, we all saw Star Trek Into Darkness recently.
But like 2 weeks now?
Yeah. But that was, I think, the last movie we all saw together.
I think that's the last good movie that's been out.
Yeah.
Until
or Iron Man 3. I like that one.
Think was that after? Movie.
No, that was before.
That was before, yeah.
It was a week, 2 weeks earlier, I think.
Yeah. But, I mean, we've already talked in depth about it, but I don't know if we wanted to change gears into film again.
My only thing with that movie is that, yes, it was fun, and you can make the argument that, no, it wasn't really Star Trek, it was more Star Wars, and my biggest problem with that movie was that it was high action. It was an action film. It was not an adventure film. It was, I mean, there was some adventure to it, but it was more of an action film. The level of the speed of things that was going on was at this very high plateau the entire movie. And it did not really go up.
It was like doing 17 hits of speed. Not that I know.
Yeah. And for me, that kind of worries me as a Star Wars fan, like knowing that J.J. Abrams is going to go do that.
You think he's going to go even higher for Star Wars?
Yeah.
No, what I thought, I was thinking about that same thing of him taking over Star Wars. And I feel like, because we had the original Star Wars trilogy, which was quite a bit of story and awesome visual effects. And then we had the new trilogy, 1, 2, and 3. That was all like, how high can we push the special effects on it? And
but,
like trash
but story. Most of it
and so
was...
now J.J. Abrams is going to do that same thing, but the story will be a little better. It's going to be like, how much CGI and awesome effects can we throw in a better story?
I think Star Wars needs a little bit more action because I felt like the old ones, they had just the right mix, and then the new ones had like too much, like just talking. Like everybody was just standing around talking.
But it was also done poorly too.
But when there was action, it was like inconsequential because you had robots versus clones. Like just...
You don't care about either.
Yeah, right? Like there's not like...
But when a rebel died, that's a person.
The clones aren't like troopers who have families and like relationships with the people. They're just clones, and the robots are just built in a factory.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's
that's the way of dumbing down
either
violence.
Of these armies.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
two completely disposable armies.
So, Ben, you're afraid that J.J. Abrams is going to be on the set of Star Wars and be like, all right, let's do this take. Flare, give me a flare. I need flares everywhere.
I can still see someone's face. More flare.
No, I think that even if he did that, it probably wouldn't be worse than the prequels.
Oh, no. It's surely going to be better
than
the prequels.
It can only go up.
Yeah. But the Red Letter Media guys said this, and I think I kind of agree. The Star Trek is in the right hands director-wise, but they had problems with the writing. Just from their standpoint. I don't think there's a problem with Abrams' directing style, because I really liked Into Darkness, and... It wasn't Star Trek 1 or Star Trek 2009, I'll call it. It wasn't that again, at least to me.
Yeah. I thought it was a good sequel, and I liked it a lot as a sequel to the 2009 version.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to have a good sequel.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. And there are, you could probably count the number of good sequels on both hands. That's about it, like, of really great sequels. Like, Spider-Man 2 was
Kung Fu Panda 2.
I think any of those Spider-Man movies were.
How long has it been out? It's been a while.
I thought that Spock's con lion was kind of...
That was a fan service right there. That was only there for the fans, and it was a bad fan service at that.
Yeah.
It wasn't very good.
Yeah, and like what I was about to get into, and
I've seen worse.
I know you guys have all... I know you guys have all heard...
No! this was the worry. That if we brought up Star Trek, that David was going to go off.
Yes, and I will control myself. I mean, you guys have all heard my rant, and because as I said, like I think it was a great sequel to the 2009 version. But and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think I'm the most like original like Trekkie fan out of any. Yeah. I know Ben, you've watched a bunch of Next Generation, but that's about it. T- to my knowledge. I've
seen some Voyager and some Deep Space Nine.
And I don't think you guys have seen some stuff. But yeah, as it matches up to the entire Star Trek franchise, I don't think, like, I think it's getting too far away from what the original series was supposed to be about, which is drama.
I have hope that action. The way they set it up in the end, that the next one is going to be about that. Like, they had the set of the characters, kind of fun, and then they did the, like, okay, we're using these characters, let's do an awesome action movie, and now let's go explore.
Yeah.
And, that's why I feel like it was
going to
happen. I don't see it happening.
I feel like at the end when they said, like, yeah, the five-year... you know, mission, that they're going to finally get into what kind of the original series did, was like they're just exploring space. But I don't know. I mean, obviously, it's Abrams is going to mix in his own drama.
Didn't they
in there,
end that the same way as the first movie, the 2009 movie?
No.
No.
They still had the Enterprise jumping off.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They had that, but not in, like, they didn't say anything about the five-year mission. Yeah. Like, they're just going off somewhere.
I have faith.
Yeah.
That's just me.
This is the first time that he's, like, an official, like, captain, like, taken seriously because of his actions. Like, before, it was just kind of like Pike got hurt and he did a good job, but then he never really changed.
No cadet would get out of the academy that early. That was bull.
You know, you know what's interesting is the pilot of the very first Star Trek cat is, like, none of the original cast is in it except for Spock, and he looks super young, but Captain Pike is the main character.
Yeah.
And then I guess they wanted to have another pilot because the studio was like, we don't want to do that. But if you want to make another pilot, like, a year later. And then they got in William Shatner and everybody else. Mm-hmm.
And they changed him to the woman, like, I don't know what you want to call it. Like, just like the ladies man, the type of
Oh, yeah.
Goes around the galaxy having
Playboy. He's a playboy.
Aliens.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's going to do it for our podcast here.
Yep.
Cool. Well, thank you everybody for listening in. This has been Interception Studios. We're signing off.